You're listening to Talking Agility, a podcast from Accenture. Your host is Elitsa Nacheva.
Hello and welcome back to Talking Agility. I'm Elitsa Nacheva, the co-lead of the Agile practice within Accenture's Financial Services Talent and Organization team. Today, we're going to take a step back and look at the big picture question. What can enterprise agility do for organizations facing disruption? In this episode, we'll cover the wise pivot. We're going to speak about innovation by design and building it into the business and Accenture's own pivot and transformation journey. It is a really challenging and exciting topic, and I'm thrilled to be joined by a very special guest today to dive into it. Omar Abosh is Accenture's Chief Executive for Communications, Media and Technology Business. Previously, he also served as Accenture's Chief Strategy Officer. He is the co-author of the newly launched Pivot to the Future book and also the host of the Pivot to the Future podcast, co-hosted with Will.i.am, for which I have to say I am very jealous. He joins me today from London. Hello, Omar, and welcome to Talking Agility.
Hey, Elena, thank you very much.
To kick off with, let's talk about disruption. I think we can all agree that businesses around the world are facing a period of unprecedented disruption, but not all disruption looks the same. So what are the different types of disruption facing businesses today that you have seen, and also who is at risk?
Well, let me dig into that a little bit. I mean, the first thing is everybody's at risk. There's not one company in one industry that we believe is immune from disruption. Now, what do we mean by disruption? When we mention disruption, people think about Nokia and the smartphones, or Kodak and digital photography, or Blockbuster and Netflix. Mm-hmm. But it turns out that those examples of what we call Big Bang or explosive disruption are quite rare, although they're famous. But that's when a whole company or a whole industry disappears. Mm-hmm. The second and much more common type of disruption is what we call compressive disruption. And this is where companies' profit streams are squeezed over time because of a whole series of changes happening in their business. Expectation shifts, regulatory changes, and above all, technology innovation-based startups stealing away pieces of the margin of the existing industry. And that's what we see happening to the vast majority of big corporations across the world today.
One of the things that when I was going through the book that I read is basically the stance that you need to be the disruptor, not to be the disruptive, if you are to compete with that unprecedented pace of change in technology in today's world.
Yeah, I mean, what all the leading companies recognize is that innovation and modern innovation, which is often built on modern technology, is the source of disruption. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, disruption is more predictable than one might think. And it's all about understanding what innovations are happening in your zone, in your ecosystem, in your domain, in your industry, that you need to be taking advantage of and harnessing so that actually you drive that innovation and therefore you become a disruptor rather than waiting for someone else to pick it up and take advantage of what they perceive as opportunities to create new value with that innovation in your space, and then you become disrupted. And so the leading companies that we work with and that we see take the position and posture of saying, hey, we want to lead on innovation. We will lead in creating new sources of value, and therefore we will disrupt others, not the other way around.
Absolutely. And I have also read about a disruptability index. Would you kindly tell us what that index is about and what it's measuring?
Sure. When we first started the research that ultimately led to the concept of the wise pivot and the book, it was all done in parallel with our thinking about Accenture's strategy. But we looked at the financial performance of companies and their digital intensity. That's where we began. And we had this thesis that said companies that were more digitally intensive should perform better financially. Actually, what we found is only 6% of companies were using digital to drive financial performance overall. So we wanted to understand what was really going on. And that's a whole detailed chapter that I can bore you with. But that led us to think about saying, well, you know, are there effects beyond the use of digital? And actually what we started to study was different industries in different periods of vulnerability and different periods of disruption. And so actually what we looked at were the factors that could drive the current disruption in a business today. So for example, the number of bankruptcies happening in a sector, mm-hmm. with potential of future disruption in an industry tomorrow. In other words, the level of investment or perhaps underinvestment in intellectual property and patents. And so we had a whole series of different metrics. We applied it across several thousand companies from the year 2000 till today, 96 different industry subsegments. And we studied the disruptibility index of different industries and different companies. And it showed us that there are patterns in disruption that you can see and predict, and that different industries are in different zones of disruption, ranging from vulnerability to durability, but that those zones persist for longer than people may think. And as I mentioned earlier, that's up to a decade, typically.
And you also mentioned at the beginning the WISE pivot. Could you please provide a definition or a quick overview of the idea for our listeners? I know there are several steps involved in making the WISE pivot.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the concept of what's inside the book, Pivot to the Future, is to say, look, the old rules of business and strategy no longer apply in a world where technology-fueled change is accelerating and thereby changing market and industry structures in a way that we've never seen before. So therefore, rules like build a competitive advantage and defend it doesn't really work. So I'll give you an example. In the telco space, the strategy always was build a network, and the network would be your source of competitive advantage. But that was before Netflix came and rode over your network and stole your customers. And so this logic of defending a competitive advantage doesn't really work. And so we said there needs to be a new logic. Mm-hmm. And the new logic was to say, how do I take modern innovation in my core business to transform my core business to cut costs and maximize investment capacity? And we call that transforming the core. How do we use some of that investment capacity to create new growth in the core business? And we call that growing the core. And then finally, and very difficultly, how do we take some investment capacity and find and then scale new businesses? And that's scaling the new. And it's the combination of transform the core, grow the core, scale the new together, that when you think about how I move money and resource and people from the core business into the new business over time, that I pull off a WISE pivot.
And now that we have defined what the WISE pivot is, what do you think is the relationship between enterprise agility and organizations' ability to make the WISE pivot?
Well, as I explained to many of our clients, to actually pull off a WISE pivot, you need both top-down and bottom-up actions. So the top-down actions, which really belong to the CEO and the executive team, are about how much money do I invest in which business when? Mm-hmm. That's something that really only that group of people can have the authority typically to make those choices and decisions. And so it's a question of, do I invest more or less in my existing business? And how do I change that over time? That's a top-down decision. Mm-hmm. However, as I said earlier, disruption is coming from innovation. And innovation is something that has to be applied not at the edge of the business, but throughout the entire business. In order to apply innovation in a useful way, which again is a whole big topic because a lot of companies spend money on innovation, but they don't create value from it. But to apply it in a useful way, innovation has to be solving real business problems. And that's a bottom-up exercise. That's not something the CEO can sit in the C-suite and figure out. People in the organization have to be able to apply innovation at each and every aspect of how the company operates, whether it's a corporate function, whether it's in core operations, whether it's customer-facing, whether it's in new product development. You need to apply innovation. And you have to do it at speed. And that is all about enterprise agility. And that's a bottom-up exercise. And so when we see companies that are able to apply innovation back into the core business, those are often the ones that show the highest degree of enterprise agility.
And to quote one of the people that you speak with on your podcast, who is Jean-Pascal Tricoire, the CEO of Schneider Electric, he says that is considered a good pivot, one which you initiate rather than the ones that you have to suffer. Because in my experience, we have seen a lot of companies kind of realizing that they need to suddenly become agile because other organizations are doing it, which is sort of the self-imposed. But those organizations who do the good pivot, who initiate that change, have proven to be a lot more successful. And we see it in a lot of our research and our latest enterprise agility point of view.
Yeah, I mean, and I think with Jean-Pascal, you have there a company that's more than 180 years old, 180. And he's been leading it for more than 10 years himself, not 180 years. And you know, the fact that they've stayed alive and kept reinventing themselves and kept reinnovating means that they've made a whole series of WISE pivots. Mm-hmm. And the language that you heard him use there is all about the language of him wanting to be a disruptor and not on the receiving end of someone else's innovation. So this idea of figuring out which innovations you'll apply and then using it to pivot your business puts you on the front foot rather than on the back foot and receiving the problem. So I think that is exactly the right way to go about it.
You're listening to Talking Agility. If you're enjoying this podcast, you might also enjoy the Accenture Insurance Influencers podcast with host Igrani Yu. In each episode, Igrani takes a deep dive on insurance trends, challenges, and innovations with some of the industry's leading changemakers. Visit Accenture.com/insurance influencers where you can subscribe and listen. Now, back to Talking Agility with your host, Elitza Nacheva.
And you've written about the idea of innovation by design, which I think contradicts to an extent with the popular image of innovation as sort of this kind of eureka light bulb moment that happens in some innovation room somewhere in a trendy location. Could you tell us a little bit more about innovation by design and the idea behind it?
Sure. So we defined innovation as the money that companies spend on R&D, so research and development, on corporate venture capital, so when the company itself creates its own VC capability, and on technology-based M&A, so technology acquisitions. And we looked at that number, and in big companies, that number is $3.2 trillion per annum. It's a huge number. So companies, as I said, are spending a lot of money on innovation. We then looked at and said, which ones are using that to drive value and growth in their businesses? And it turns out the number is only 14%. And actually has declined in the last 5 years from where it was. So companies are spending a lot of money on innovation, but they're struggling to convert that into value growth. And so we said, well, why is that? And we looked at 49 different habits of innovation that we studied all the innovation literature since the 1960s to say, what are all the different things that people can do to innovate? And we tried to figure out of those innovation habits, which ones of those correlated with better financial performance overall from the innovation investment. And it turns out that the companies that are successful were not companies that treated innovation as random acts of genius or random acts of creative genius. But in fact, they were companies that had a disciplined, top-down approach to how to think about innovation. That doesn't mean, by the way, that it's controlled top-down, but it's structured top-down. They make decisions about, do I do things centrally or decentrally? Do I share common skills that are scarce, like machine learning and data science skills, or do I distribute them in the business units? Do I apply innovation experiments for the purposes of continual improvement and or for disruptive change? They look at innovation habits like co-creating new products with customers versus figuring that they could do it all alone. And so that's what I mean by innovation by design. It's a deliberate process where they think through carefully the different levers you have to pull to create an innovation process that makes a difference with the company, that brings innovation into the mothership of the core business and not sitting at the edge somewhere. And those are the ones that deliver much better outcomes.
For me, I draw a parallel between what we have done in the past few years internally at Accenture with our clients as well through the concept of design thinking, which is also embedded in our four methodology through which we engage with our clients and we deliver our work. And for the benefit of our listeners, I would say there is a book called Innovation by Design by Thomas Lockwood and Edgar Rapke, which I recently bought. And it's very, very interesting to read. But it looks at how any organization can leverage design thinking to produce change, drive new ideas, and deliver meaningful solutions. So for anyone listening to our episode today who is not familiar with the concept of innovation by design or human-centered design or design thinking, which all kind of summarize the same thing, I think that book is kind of the 101 version that will be very, very helpful. My next question is around enterprise agility again. In the world of enterprise agility, it can seem like faster is always better. Is that also true when it comes to a wise pivot? And what are the risks of pivoting too fast?
Well, when I talk to a lot of our clients about being digital, actually, essentially, what I believe the single adjective that best describes being digital is its speed. The companies that can move quickly typically do better. Now, having said that, that doesn't mean that you have to make every aspect of a wise pivot quickly. Like, as I mentioned earlier, one of the concepts of the wise pivot is, for example, the financial reallocation that occurs between the core business to the new business over time. If you do that too quickly, then a company could be a leader in a market, but it may be taking all of its investment and moving it to a market that's not yet ready. in other words, a small market, and thereby denying its core business, which is actually driving today's profit growth, of the investment fuel it needs to succeed. And so actually you can stretch your financials and really damage the company by going too quickly in that case.
Sure.
But that's an example where speed without thought, it doesn't qualify as wise, and it will become a pivot, but not a wise one. And so that's why, going too fast can be a risk. In practice, however, what we find is most businesses go too slow, and the risk of obsolescence is higher than the risk of being too early.
So would you make a conclusion that sort of an old economy company is going too slow to perform better in a disrupted world? I think you said in your book that those who succeed will do so because of disruption and because they are responding with pace to the change that is coming their way.
Well, the way I think about that one, Ellie, is to say, look, one of the old wisdoms of business is you exit the old and you get to the new. And actually, we don't agree with that. We actually think that if you're clever with applying innovation investments in the old, in the legacy business, you can renew it and you can discover new profit streams that people didn't think would be there to help you sustain your business. I mean, the classic example that we give in the book is about Netflix. Everyone knows about Netflix streaming movies and series to people's devices. What most people don't know is that Netflix retained today the DVD mail order business still with about 4 million customers. Now, actually, at one point in time, they tried to shut it down, and then they realized that that was cutting off a key revenue and profit stream for them at just the wrong moment, and then they got it going again. And it's proved extremely successful. Despite now the huge digital part of the business, that old mail order business is still there. And that's an example of making a pivot, not where you ditch the old, but you figure out how to make these things coexist at the right levels of investment and management.
That's a brilliant example. And I had no idea they had retained their DVD business. And one of my actually final question is that Accenture has undertaken a transformation journey of its own. Pierre Nanterre, our beloved late CEO, said in the preface of your book that because Accenture faced potentially destructive ways capable of making us relevant, our leaders knew we couldn't stand still and had to reinvent ourselves. And I personally think this was a very inspiring reinvention because myself, I was also part of it. Would you share this reinvention story with our listeners?
Sure. I mean, there's a short and a long version of this, but I'll try and be succinct. So firstly, Accenture's not stopped reinventing itself and will continue to always do that. But the period that we're talking about here from let's say 2014 until 2019, was basically saying in a world of, very good competitive players in technology from places like India, in a world of brand new services appearing on cloud stack technologies, that create a different kind of pressure of substitution risks, Accenture was seeing that the area where it had been previously dominant could become under pressure. And so we said, look, we need to reinvent ourselves. And so there was this, multi-tier change that we made to the business. Firstly, a recognition that we needed a new set of services for the new era. And so we talked about digital cloud and security. And in the case of digital, it was around interactive, mobile, and analytics. Today, that has evolved. But we were very clear about these new services, as Pierre used to call them, the IMACs, Interactive Mobility Analytics, Cloud and Security, and that we would really emphasize our growth and focus in those areas. In fact, we reduced our measures internally down to a single measure around revenues in the new and the growth rate in the new. So whether you're an Accenture Digital or Accenture China, whether you're an Accenture Banking or Accenture CMT, you had that measure of the rotation to the new index. Secondly, we recognized that to deliver these new services, we needed to change our business architecture. A monolithic, singular Accenture wouldn't work, and we needed to distinguish between the different markets we were in. So Accenture Strategy, distinct from Accenture Consulting, from Accenture Digital, Accenture Technology, and Accenture Operations, and now Accenture Security. Those became different businesses with different cost structures, with different HR rules, with different career paths. And then finally, the investment agenda. Accenture had been a relatively conservative investor in the past, very low level of acquisitions. But to give you a sense of the change, we went from a handful of acquisitions before 2014 to having done 100 acquisitions in the last 5 years or so, and fundamentally changing the nature of who we are, because the people that we're bringing in are entrepreneurs, they're founders, They have incredibly agile and fast cultures, and how we bring those people in and learn from them and use their experience and knowledge to change Accenture has been a critical part of the journey. So I don't want to oversimplify. There's much more I could say about it, but those three things around the new services, the new business architecture, and the new attitude towards investment have been critical elements of the rotation and the pivot that we've made for it.
Thank you, Omar. That was a very interesting summary. And I've myself worked with one of our acquisitions with Fjord. And I can say that I was massively inspired by the way that they think about problems, the way that they perceive a client situation, and the way they co-create, which has personally taught me quite a lot. So those acquisitions have been a really great addition to the Accenture family. So in conclusion, Omar, thank you very much for sharing your perspectives with us. It was a real great pleasure speaking with you today. And please say hi to Will.i.am.
Pleasure, Ellie. Thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
Omar co-hosts a fantastic podcast with Will.i.am, a philanthropist, musician, and a technology investor, which is called Pivot to the Future. You can find it on iTunes. Omar has also just released a new book named Also Pivot to the Future, which you can find on Amazon. We'll post links to both on our website, accenture.com/talkingagility. And as always, we're keen to hear from you, your feedback on the show, either your thoughts on what we discussed on today's episode, or ideas for future shows, or any general feedback. Find me through our website or on Twitter at Elitsa Nacheva. This was Talking Agility. Thank you for tuning in and talk to you soon.